Ani, and welcome to Bomsida, an Aboriginal news magazine program that features news, current affairs, a focus on community and culture, spotlights on entertainment and great tunes, and every flavor from Aboriginal artists. I'm your host, Jennifer Ashwasagay. Mi'kmaq and Nova Scotia are edging their way closer to forming another government within the province. Hot issues in the Ring of Fire, Mining Watch Canada is not happy with the current environmental assessment process for one project, while one Mtawa chief speaks out against Aboriginal issues in the area, and mining is also in the spotlight on the West Coast. Organization First Nations Women Advocating Responsible Mining was disappointed to see the province's empty seat at its mining forum, and Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi says it's back to work after Ontario's provincial elections. All these stories plus great tunes from Desiree Dorian's album, Soul Black Jack, right after the news. Here's your national Aboriginal news. Trouble continues to heat up in Ontario's Ring of Fire area. Mining Watch Canada has been keeping an eye on the environmental assessment process for the Cliff Natural Resources proposed chromite mine. Ramsey Hart, program coordinator with the Mining Watch Canada, says the environmental assessment announced by the province isn't good enough because it's largely a paper process with not a lot of public interaction and consultation. Hart says people in the area would prefer a joint review panel to look at an interactive approach to the environmental assessments.
The Mtawa First Nations, as well as Mishkegawak First Nations, and a number of civil society organizations, NGOs, and environmental groups have all recommended that given the size and the complexity of the Cliffs Chromite Project, the fact that it's the first in this area, substantial infrastructure requirements, clearly this is a case where a review panel process is warranted. And that request has been ignored.
Hart adds consultation protocols with First Nations are not being respected. Peter Munias, Neskatanga First Nation chief, feels very strongly that the community hasn't been consulted.
Cliff Natural Resources has no respect for the First Nations territories or First Nations people, as far as I'm concerned. The reason why I said that, they have not set foot or called directly, other than the guinea pigs that they use to call us here for to do whatever you call that, the shoe in there to, you know, for them to go ahead and do it and take all that consultation. We don't want that. What we want is we want our grassroots people to be consulted with prior consent given by them, not by the government.
Munias says the government has painted a rosy picture of the proposed chromite mining project, and he says the mining project will have environmental consequences to First Nations people in the area.
Who's going to be affected? It's the First Nations people, because we have the species that are in the water, the fish, the sturgeon, any other species of fish that are in the water are going to be badly affected. And when that happens, it's the First Nations people that we have that, it's our food. Eh? It's the same thing with the land animals. The government doesn't eat from the land. They eat from cows and already farmed animals. So they don't care about what's happening with the land here.
Munias adds they wouldn't be opposed to the project if they were consulted properly and included in the project. Meanwhile, Hart says there's still a chance for the federal government to call for a review panel and engage First Nations in the process. And on the West Coast, mining issues are similar. First Nations Women Advocating Responsible Mining were disappointed that a provincial representative didn't show up at a mining forum. The forum was hosted by FN Warm and the University of Victoria last week. Soda Creek Indian Band Chief Bev Sellers is the chair of the First Nations Women Advocating Responsible Mining, and she says with many new mining projects, it's too bad a rep from the province didn't attend.
Unfortunately, we had invited government, but they, the day of the forum, they let us know that there would be no one there, which was unfortunate because the Premier of BC had just announced that there were a number of new mines opening and a number of other mines that were being expanded. So they had 4 weeks' notice, so I'm not sure why they didn't take the opportunity to come to the forum.
Sellers says the forum was held to open up discussions in the industry and find solutions to conflict caused by provincial mining regulations. She adds provincial legislation mandates for consultation are set too low, and mine companies in attendance maintain they follow rules, but Sellers says there needs to be more First Nation accommodation and consultation. The forum was held late last week at the University of Victoria. Anishinaabe Nation in Ontario is maintaining its opposition to Bill S2, the proposed federal matrimonial real property bill. NAN Deputy Grand Chief Mike Metatawaben told Wawate News that the bill does not respect First Nation jurisdiction rights. Plus, the organization says the bill doesn't have any funds attached to it to enable an implementation period. Jackie Fletcher with NAN's Women Council doesn't like the bill either and has said the government still has a paternalistic and condescending attitude. The bill is currently in its second reading in Senate. Aboriginal leaders in Ontario are congratulating Premier Dalton McGuinty on being re-elected for his third term in office. The Liberal Party got back in with a minority government on October 6th. Gary Lipinski, president of the Métis Nation of Ontario, says Minot expects to move forward with the McGuinty government and build on the historic framework. Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madoffi also hopes to move forward in a positive direction.
We will really, challenge all the parties to address our issues, particularly in terms of resource benefit sharing and economic development, education, health, child welfare, all the major issues that we've been advancing, already with this Liberal government. So we will continue to work with them. We've had a pretty good relationship with the Liberal government. We've had good support from the NDP. And, there are pockets of PC candidates that... have worked well with First Nations, so I'm looking forward to this next mandate here.
Angus Toulouse, Regional Chief of the Chiefs of Ontario, expects to see relationship building between First Nations and the province continue, and Toulouse also identified similar issues as Madabi, plus he pointed out that First Nation leaders in the province would like to see a dedicated Minister of Aboriginal Affairs in the province. A modified substance abuse program is helping First Nation communities in Alberta. iNews 880 reports a revised version of the Botvin Life Skills Training Program has been adopted by the community of Alexis Nakota Sioux Nation. Elders from the community wanted to combat fetal alcohol spectrum disorder. The three-year program is for children in grades 3 to 5, and another program is also offered for kids in grades 6 through 8. The program is also to help build confidence to say no to peer pressure. The Assembly of First Nations is the latest organization to withdraw from the BC Missing Women's Commission of Inquiry. FN has pulled out, citing limitations of the inquiry and an imbalance in inequity in legal resources made available to the parties. National Chief Sean Atleo said in a statement, "The Assembly of First Nations is no longer confident the inquiry will bring justice for the families of missing and murdered women in Canada." Atleo also says they will press for a national level inquiry. Meanwhile, First Nations Summit Grand Chief Edward John came out of the gates with strong words for the inquiry. Vancouver 980 reports the Grand Chief told the inquiry that Indigenous women are neglected by society. The Globe and Mail reports that the military is keeping an eye on Aboriginal groups. The military is keeping watch through an intelligence unit that's meant to protect the forces and the Department of National Defense from espionage, terrorists, and saboteurs. The intelligence unit produced about 8 reports on the activities of Native organizations from January 2010 to July 2011. The Globe also writes the reports devote a lot of space to future protests and lobbying on Parliament Hill by Native groups, including the activities of the Assembly of First Nations, the Algonquin Anishinaabeg Nation Tribal Council, and Red Power United. An Atlantic Coast study suggests that First Nation chiefs make too little money. The Chronicle Herald reports the study was commissioned by Atlantic Policy Congress of First Nations Chiefs Secretariat. That after media reports about many First Nation chiefs in Canada making higher salaries than provincial premiers and even the Prime Minister. 10 out of 36 chiefs from the Congress volunteered for the study. The study also pointed out that chiefs under review often donated a portion of their salary to needy band members. Donations given out were from 10% to 25% of their own salaries. The chief salaries under review for the study started at just over $40,000 and topped out at almost $150,000. Inuit and Gwich'in have a spot in an exhibit on climate change at the Smithsonian National Museum of the American Indian in Washington, D.C. The exhibit explores the impact of global climate change from the perspective of 15 indigenous communities in 13 countries. Cambridge Bay in Nunavut is one of those communities, and the communities in Canada have seen large changes to the land and animal migration patterns due to climate change. The exhibit, Conversations with the Earth, Indigenous Voices on Climate Change, opened in July and runs through January 2nd. And that's your National Aboriginal News.
I'm sick and I'm tired of this run around. I got my high heels on and I'm hitting the town. There was a time when the thought of you was enough to keep me home, crying the blues. Did you really think you could keep me down? I'm a mother's daughter, you should know by now. I got my soul back, Jack, my head dead friend. Nobody's taking this from me. I've been gone too long, now I'm where I belong. I'm finally feeling home free. I'm gonna take it back. I got my soul back, Jack. Away these Maybelline tears. My hair, it's looking just right. The boys are getting whiplash 'cause my jeans are so tight. I got a new style and I got a new plan. You're not on my radar now, understand. I got my soul back, Jack. I ain't dead friend, and nobody's taking this from me.
Desiree Dorian with Soul Black Jack, the title song of her 2010 CD, and Desiree is the winner of Best Country Album in the 2011 North American Indigenous Image Awards. Mi'kmaq and Nova Scotia are working on creating another form of their own government in the province, and it's reported that it would be the first of its kind. But before any big news goes out about a new model of governance, Acadia First Nation Chief Deborah Robinson says a lot more work needs to be done.
What we are trying to do is to, and have been doing for the last number of years, is to build our own governance, Mi'kmaq governance structure. Mi'kmaq being M-I-apostrophe-K-M-A-Q. And one that is, of course, accountable. One that certainly is not to replace or remove the Indian Act, but rather we are seeking a process of governance that will work for our people, the betterment of our people. For example, our social, our economic, our cultural, our overall well-being and our health. So we are working on building a governance structure.
So tell me what that will look like.
At this stage, we are still in the process of consulting with our own community and community members, in the best way that we can. We have to provide effective and transparent and accountable government on universal issues. So it is very important that all voices are heard, especially the elderly and the youth and the disabled people who cannot or do not wish to go into a public forum, that we go to them and we listen and that we hear all the Mi'kmaq in Nova Scotia through this process.
So when did you start the process?
In the last 5 years. Yeah, we've been in negotiations for the last 5 years.
And so when do you expect it to be complete?
Well, now that's hard to say. It really is, Jennifer, because I can't put a time limit on how long it takes to hear from our people. But it's a process in the making and in the works, and we're moving along. You know, we're just in that process now, so I can't give an actual time frame.
So if this this government is not replacing the Indian Act or Indian Affairs, then what does that mean?
That will be determined by the results of the Mi'kmaq and what they would like to see in place in terms of governance structure. You know, we are talking with the province now to look at a place where we can work and deal with our governance issues that is central to the Mi'kmaq people in Nova Scotia.
Okay, and where can you see this government being placed?
I would like to see it central, somewhere probably in the city of Halifax, where Halifax is the central, capital city of Nova Scotia, in a facility that, you know, is central to all the First Nations from Yarmouth to Sydney. And we are in the city every week at our meetings at the present time. And so I feel that, a central location would be ideal there in the city of Halifax. However, there's still a lot of questions that need to be answered on that.
And what about funding for the structure?
Well, that's another thing that is still in the negotiation, the funding aspect, we need to look at our own resources as well as acquiring financial resources to sustain our house of government and to sustain our activities once we reach that point. So that is all still in the process of negotiation.
Why is a Mi'kmaq governance structure important?
You know, I think that there's so much that needs to be determined, but I think that we can all agree we need to move towards something that is Mi'kmaq driven, that comes from Mi'kmaq people. And, for the overall good and well-being of our First Nation. And in my view, I think that everyone needs to be involved in this process. So having said that, there still is a lot to be determined, but everyone's view is important, and I think that our mandate will come from the people in this province of Nova Scotia, the Mi'kmaq. You know, there's how can I say it? we need to continue to move in a direction that will work towards a better life, not only for our youth of today, but for generations to come.
That was Acadia First Nation Chief Deborah Robinson. Mining Watch Canada has been keeping its eye on mining activities in northwestern Ontario in the area known as the Ring of Fire. The Ring of Fire sits in the traditional territories of a handful of First Nation communities. Plus, it's also a very environmentally sensitive area. Ramsey Hart is the program coordinator at Mining Watch Canada.
So some very large mineral deposits have been found in an area of northern Ontario, between the First Nation communities of Wabikwe, Martin Falls, within the Matawa First Nations area. This is a roadless area. It's on the boundary of the James Bay Lowlands and the Canadian Shield, and currently access to the area is by plane or to the communities by Winter Road. So he's got a major mineral find, lots and lots of exploration activity, and so far two projects that have been filed with the federal authorities for permits and triggering environmental assessment processes. The one that's further ahead in that is Cliff's Chromite Project, which is reputed to be one of the largest chromite deposits in the world. In order to get the chromite out of the ground, they will need to develop significant infrastructure to get to and from the mine site, as well as the mine itself, the waste management facilities, and then they're also proposing a chromite processing facility somewhere. But we're not sure exactly where yet. So that's a lot of different activities that are related to that one project.
Well, it is certainly a busy place, and we know that the province has been promoting the Ring of Fire for quite some time. And I understand there's something a little bit unusual going on with that. They're not going to be holding public hearings?
Well, what just happened on Friday, Canadian Environmental Assessment Agency announced that it would be initiating a environmental assessment, and that the kind of environmental assessment that it would be initiating is one called a comprehensive study. There's three levels of environmental assessment at the, within the Canadian system. Screening, which is very minimal, internal sort of government process with very low opportunity for public comment. A comprehensive study, which is a largely paper process where documents are put up online and people can download them and read them and submit written comments to the government, and then the government takes whatever consideration they choose to and makes a decision about the project. And then there's a review panel, which is, from our experience, by far the most rigorous, where an independent panel is charged with taking in the information, hosting public hearings, weighing the information that's presented to them from different perspectives. It allows an opportunity for people that aren't perhaps able to write technical briefs or long-written briefs to take an active and engaged part in the process. And so the Matawa First Nations, as well as Meshkigawak First Nations, and a number of civil society organizations, NGOs, and environmental groups have all recommended that given the size, the complexity of the Cliffs Chromite Project, the fact that it's the first in this area, substantial infrastructure requirements, clearly this is a case where a review panel process is warranted, and that request has been ignored.
And I know certainly First Nations are always pushing for consultation and accommodation, and have we seen any of that in this case, especially with the chromite mine, or possible?
Especially from the federal government, and only marginally more from the provincial government. This decision seems to have been taken from the federal government entirely unilaterally, without any real dialogue or process involving the First Nations. And you know, beyond the sort of the letter of what kind of process the First Nations were advocating for, what they want is a shared decision-making process that respects the government's obligations, as well as, you know, the intent of our treaties, which is to share the land and share in management of the land. And that's clearly not being respected at this point.
And so what's going to happen, and what would be Mining Watch's role?
So we're going to, there's still, this isn't a done deal. There is still the potential for the federal government to bump up or increase the level of scrutiny of this project to a review panel and to engage First Nations in a respectful dialogue, consider the input of stakeholders, and reevaluate it and come up with a much a better process than what they're proposing at this stage. So we'll be working on that. We'll be coordinating with the First Nations to see where they would like to go and what route they'd like to take. They'll certainly need to be political pressure brought to bear on the federal government, and also to see what role Ontario intends on playing in this and whether or not they are planning on stepping up to the plate and doing a proper review process. So we'll be sharing information, talking to the media, like with you, and was on BBC Radio this morning in Thunder Bay, and really just pointing out to the people of Ontario and Canada about what is going on and the real problems that are being caused by the strategies and the approach that's being taken so far.
That was Ramsey Hart, Program Coordinator at Mining Watch Canada. The issues that he raises are the very same for Chief Peter Munius of Nanga First Nation, who has also thrown his support behind Kitinemakusibninawag.
Cliff's Natural Resources has no respect for the First Nations territories or First Nations people, as far as I'm concerned. The reason why I say that, they have not set foot or called directly other than the guinea pigs that they use to call us here to do whatever you call that, the shoe in there to, you know, for them to go ahead and do it, and they call that consultation. We don't want that. What we want is we want our grassroots people to be consulted with prior consent given by them, not by the government. They just go on a territory and without asking, can I have your consent to work in your territory and work with you guys as partners of the land?
And so have you even heard from government about this specific project?
Well, I heard government a lot of times saying that, oh, it's a good project, it's going to bring resources. But to who the resources are going to be coming to? It's the government that's going to get the resource funding, money, or anything financial. First Nations are not going to get anything out of it, you know, the way things are moving right now. That's why we have to put a stand on the traditional lands that we think belongs to our ancestors and our people.
And are you... And what do you think of the environmental assessments that are going to be held in the area?
Okay, it has to come from again from us. It's not, it can't come from the government again, the environmental assessment or the mining companies. It has to come from us because this is what's happening. Any company, mining companies that are working within the area are... Most of it are swamp lands, you know. And all these swamp lands, where do you think the water goes? It goes right to the river system, you know. Any chemicals that are being buried underground. How can you bury something underground which is almost soaked in water, you know? That's what I can't understand, where the environmental thing is going to go with this swamp land that... the mining companies and the government is talking about. Who's going to be affected? It's the First Nations people, because we have the species that are in the water, the fish, the sturgeon, any other species of fish that are in the water are going to be badly affected. And when that happens, it's the First Nations people that we have that, it's our food, eh? You know?
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with the land animals. The government doesn't eat from the land. They eat from cows and, you know, where the farmed animals. So they don't care about what's happening with the land here. That's why I said this, and I have to be very strong on it. And reality must come out and be heard by the public. That's the reality of it. the fish are going to die. All the land animals are going to die. The moose is going to die, you know, from that.
And lastly, Chief, ideally, what would you like to see?
What would I like to see? Consultation and accommodation for the First Nations people.
So if that happens, you wouldn't be opposed to development?
As long as they're willing to work with us and in the revenue sharing and everything, all the sharing that we need to be accommodated with, you know, and we need to be consulted, we need to be told exactly what's going to happen to these developments, you know. But the government is not doing that. They're saying we're doing it publicly, but they're not doing it. They're lying to the public right now. You ask me how many times does the mining company come here and ask my people here whether the Ring of Fire is going to benefit them. Not one, not Cliffs, not Noront, not KWG has shown their faces around this community. The government tried to come in this community to tell our people everything is going to be rosy and perfect, you know, support it. No, we're not about to do that.
So what are you doing about this project?
What am I doing about it? I'm trying to work with the other First Nations to have agreements that we can all stand up together and tell the government, that's it. That's what I'm trying to do. And I'm trying to do also that treaty rights are recognized in the land of the First Nations people here in Northwestern Ontario, by the government people and by the mining companies. I'm trying to get the mining companies to understand that there's such thing as treaty rights, and the infringement of the treaty rights is when you stepped on the land and start developing without consultation to people. That's what I'm trying to do.
That was Peter Munias, Chief of Niskatanga First Nation in Northwestern Ontario. Now here's another song from Desiree Dorian, who had a big year in 2010. She won her first Canadian Aboriginal Music Award for Best Country Album. Plus, she was nominated for Best Female Vocalist, and also in the same year, Desiree was nominated for Best Country Album at the Aboriginal People's Choice Music Awards. Here's Freedom Ain't Free.
To be a man, but even a man couldn't understand and the things he'd seen, but he fought for peace. He's seen hurt and he's seen pain. He didn't cry to keep the ghost away, and he fought for peace. Now I'm living in Dauphin, in the earth there's an evergreen tree. Got a job and I've got a good husband, and I remember a freedom ain't free. Granddaddy lie awake in the middle of the night, thinking he was still in the firefight back in Normandy, where he fought for peace. Lying in pain in another man's blood, thinking of the bodies left in the mud and the men they've been, where he fought for peace. He's seen hurt and he's seen pain. He drank right to keep the ghost away, and he fought for peace. I'll always remember
Nations Women Advocating Responsible Mining co-hosted a forum on mining with the University of Victoria late last week. Soda Creek Indian Band Chief Bev Sellers is the chair of the First Nations Women Advocating Responsible Mining. She says with many new mining projects, it's too bad a representative from the province didn't attend, and there's a lot of work to do to find solution to mining conflicts in BC.
We had people from the mining industry. We had other First Nations leaders. We had a lady from the International Human Rights Clinic from Harvard Law School. And unfortunately, we had invited government, but the day of the forum, they let us know that there would be no one there, which was unfortunate because the Premier of BC had just announced that there were a number of new mines opening and a number of other mines that were being expanded, so they had 4 weeks' notice, so I'm not sure why they didn't take the opportunity to come to the forum. And it was just to open a dialogue on mining, we didn't mean it as a debate. It was just so that the parties could get together and start discussing the problems of mining and look for solutions to some of the problems with mining.
So what are some of the problems?
Well, in BC now there are over 2,000 mines, abandoned mines, that are still, their material is still, you know, getting into the soils and waters of the province. Also, the way mines are done, you know, like the First Nations Women Advocating for Responsible Mining are not against mining per se. We're against mining at any cost, and we want the mines to be responsible. And, you know, I always say that, you know, people say there are only two things in life that are certain, death and taxes. I always say that there are three things in life that are certain, death, taxes, and that the First Nations people are going to be here forever. They're going to be in their territories forever. So, you know, they need to work with us, not try to go around us. And, you know, they're in BC, there are no treaties, so the First Nations people still have title to the land that has to be reconciled, you know, with the government, and the companies have to deal with First Nations people. They can't go around them. There's also in BC this thing called online staking, and anybody with a credit card can go online and claim. You know, if it's not claimed for mining, they can go on and they can claim it, and there doesn't seem to be any restrictions. And we have people saying that, you know, that their parts of their reserve and parts of private property is being staked on reserve. That's a real problem, and we want to rectify that.
So what were some of the solutions that were discussed at the forum?
Well, first of all, mining companies have to deal with First Nations people. You know, they can't depend on the government, you know, like, and that's one of the things that that was said at the government, I mean, at the forum. The mining people said, well, we follow the rules, we follow the laws. But the law, the legislation is set so low, you know, that it just makes mining in BC look really bad. And you know, there was a study that was done where some of, you know, some of the worst offenders are Canadian mining companies. I mean, this study looked at mining companies in other parts of the world, but, you know, it's the same here in Canada, you know, and they need to start, instead of looking to government, following the government guidelines, they need to raise their standards, you know, and that was what we were hoping to, one of the things that we were hoping to accomplish at the forum was to get people to say, you know, no, we're not going to follow the government standards. We're going to raise it on our own. And but that they acknowledged there was problems, but their answer was, well, we follow government guidelines and government legislation. So That's unfortunate.
So, do you think that any awareness or understanding was raised through the forum?
Well, you know, I think that, I mean, I really have to thank the mining people for coming to the forum. If anybody was not going to show up, I would have thought it would have been them. But they were there, and they're willing to talk. And this was, you know, it was only a two-hour forum, you know, but we've begun the dialogue, and I hope that we can continue it on. And I think they heard what the First Nations people had to say, and I hope that we can continue this on down the road.
That was Soda Creek Indian Band Chief Bev Sellers, who is also the chair of First Nations Women Advocating Responsible Mining. Now here's our last tune from Desiree Dorian, and here's something about her. Not only is she an award-winning artist, Desiree holds a law degree. Here's Kiss and Make Up.
Here we are, our friends are jealous, but they don't understand what's going on. We pretend when we go out that everything is fine, but we're going down. We lay in bed at night and our walls go up. We sleep so far apart that we don't touch. How long can we keep this act up? I ain't Demi Moore, though I bet you wish I were. This ain't what love is all about. Keep it up with the Jones, but in an empty home, baby, I'm ready. Are you ready to kiss and make up? We look good, picture perfect, but if they only knew, we'd make them sick. Fake a smile for the camera, put your hand on my thigh and act impressed. Lean in closer, baby, I love you. You go next, say you love me too. How long can we keep this act up? I ain't Demi Moore, though I bet you wish I were. Living in an empty home, baby, I'm ready. Are you ready to kiss and make up? Oh, to kiss and make up. I can't remember the point I had to prove. You and me, we got so much to lose. How long can we keep this act up? I ain't Demi Moore, though I bet you wish I were. This ain't what love is all about. Keeping up with the Joneses, living in an empty home. How long can we keep this act up? I ain't Demi Moore, though I bet you wish I were. This ain't what love is all about. Keeping up with the Joneses, living in an empty home. Baby, I'm ready. Are you ready to kiss and make up?
Elections were held in Ontario October 9th, and a handful of Aboriginal leaders were okay that the Liberals were re-elected, and they hope to get right back to work on the issues that were being worked on before the election. Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madabi is looking forward to working with the re-elected Premier Dalton McGuinty.
You know, as everyone has noticed in the early stages of the election, it looked like the Tories were going to make some ground. But it became very evident in the last week of the election that the Liberals were gaining momentum, and the NDP as well. And I wasn't surprised at all by the outcome. And I guess for the Anishinaabeg people, you know, we worked with, you know, different types of governments, both majority and minority governments in the past. So, you know, we will really, I guess, challenge all the parties to, you know, address our issues, you know, particularly in terms of resource benefit sharing and economic development, education, health, child welfare, you know, all the major issues that we've been advancing, you know, already with this Liberal government. So we will continue to, continue to work with them. We've had a pretty good relationship with the Liberal government. We've had good support from the NDP. And, you know, there are pockets of PC candidates that, you know, have worked well with First Nations. So, you know, I'm looking forward to this next mandate here.
And how about, what's your reaction to the fact that during the provincial televised debate, there was no First Nations issues there at all, and McGuinty didn't even show up to the Northern debate?
Well, it doesn't surprise me one bit with respect to the main debate that First Nations issues weren't addressed. None of these parties, give that much credit to the First Nations vote in terms of, their issues. They're going to wonder, find out, if there have been impacts even in some of these outcomes of some of these elections that First Nations people voted strategically. They'll assess all that, maybe they'll start paying more attention. And I think as future elections unravel, they're going to come to realize at some point in time that they better start paying attention. It doesn't mean that, because they've ignored us in that in those debates, that they're going to be able to continue to ignore us. We are going to continue to advance our issues. As far as the Premier not going up to Thunder Bay, that's part of the political process as well. You as a leader get to have to make those calls sometimes. I myself find sometimes that you're invited to several venues at the same time, and you got to make a choice. He made a choice. I think it may have hurt him a bit, but as you can see by the fact that they almost managed to get a majority. I don't think that particular debate hurt him as much. Although the NDP showing in the north is significant, that may have played a role there, but I don't believe it was just that debate alone.
Okay.
Forestry issues and mining issues probably played more of a role in what happened in the north.
That was Anishinaabeg Nation Grand Council Chief Patrick Madhabi on the Ontario provincial elections. You've been listening to Bomb Siddaw with Jennifer Ashwasagay. Bomb Siddaw is an Aboriginal news magazine program which includes current affairs, arts and entertainment, and a cross-genre of music from Aboriginal artists. Bomb Siddaw means walking together in the Anishinaabeg language. Music for the program is courtesy of Burnt Project One. If you have comments or story ideas, visit my website at bomseda.com. That's BAMOSEDA. And thanks for listening to Bomb Siddaw.